Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, welcome to the Horse Hour podcast. I'm Amy Frost. Today I talk to Gemma Stokes from Penbode Vets, and we're talking about worming. We often focus on worm egg counts and a worming program, but what do you do if you actually spot a worm? Gemma's going to explain all on the Horse Hour podcast. Gemma's going to explain everything. This is Horse Hour. We're doing one of my favourite episodes today. It's where we get to learn about the veterinary side of horses. And we're joined by the lovely Gemma Stokes from Penbode Vets, based down on the Devon-Cornwall border. How are you, Gemma?
Very well, thank you. Nice to be here.
I'm thrilled to have you. This is the first time you've joined us on the podcast. And we're going to be talking about worming. Oh, something that just makes me cringe. But something I've learned recently, actually, is way more serious than I think we've ever taken it for before. So when you first, well, I know, let's go back to when you were learning to be a vet and you had to deal with worms. Did you not freak out? Because I think I would have done.
Yeah, although in some ways I found worms quite interesting for how their life cycles are and how actually in some ways they can benefit our horses. There is this relationship between them, but we don't want that to become too much in the worm's favour and anti for our horses.
Interesting. How can they help the horse then?
Well, they are part of the digestive process in some ways, and actually to have a low worm burden can help the horses and also help the land and the general environment that the horse is in, but it has to be at a low level. So, and also in my career, I qualified 15 years ago, it's been over that time where we've gone away from regular worming, you know, every 6 to 8 to 12 weeks to now doing the fecal egg counts and monitoring that way and targeting the worming, because the development of resistance and these superworms that don't die when we treat them with the Anthelmintix, the wormers that we have.
And this is the problem that I had this year, actually. We've done a podcast before on worm fecal counts and when you should worm count and why you should worm count. And it's all been about prevention. And I'm paranoid about worms. So I'll worm religiously, I'll do the egg counts. And then in January, I found pinworm. And my goodness, I wanted to cry. I felt like the worst horse owner. I felt like the worst livery yard owner, because as far as I'm concerned, I've done everything properly. So why have I suddenly got pinworm when I shouldn't have, you know? And so can you explain where can things like pinworm come from?
Yeah, so that's really interesting to bring up about pinworms is... because pinworms were basically pretty much, you know, something that we didn't used to talk about 15, 20 years ago, because the wormers killed most of them off and didn't cause an issue. With the modern day wormers, these work a lot better for treating the red worms that actually cause more issues and, you know, potentially life-threatening issues to some horses and ponies, whereas the pinworms don't generally. The pinworms live around the anus of the horse and on their bottom, and they actually poke their tails out and lay eggs around your horse's back end. And so it can be called anal rust, because the eggs are often orange and as they're laid around. But because the pinworm has chosen to live at the end of the digestive tract, right where the poo comes out, and the modern day wormers get absorbed earlier on in the gut, in the small intestine generally, to kill off the worms there. And actually, the wormer doesn't get to that part of the digestive tract, so they haven't been being killed off by our wormers that we've been using. Whereas years ago, we used to use potentially cheaper brands of wormers or ones that weren't quite as effective, that quite a lot of the drug might have got pooed out, but actually that was at concentrations enough to kill off the pinworms that were there sitting in the rectum. So because we're using more of the moxidectins and the ivermectins, the pinworms have been able to develop and thrive. And so we do see more problems with pinworms. And they are probably the most likely worm that you would find in the droppings of horses. So they've got a very pointy end. They look a bit like bean sprouts, really.
Yeah.
Yeah, very much like a bean sprout, really. They find in that is by, well, actually breaking the cycle of the egg laying. So you could just use, just by wiping them away so the eggs are gone, and cleaning around underneath your horse's dock and around the tail and around their back end, just with warm water often kills them. But also using a wormer, an ivermectin-based one, actually up their bottom, or wiping it around as well. And that's the way to kill off those worms. Those pinworms don't necessarily cause a major problem. They just cause an itchy bottom, really. They often make the horses feel really itchy from the way they where they lay their eggs.
Yeah, so some of the signs then to know before, because, okay, this is what happened. I'm clearing the droppings from the field, I'm poo-picking the field, and suddenly I see all these light white, they look like maggots to me, but much thinner, you know, tiny, tiny little worms, and it made me feel sick, and I felt so awful, Gemma. I felt the shame of, you know, the fact that I'd found worms. And that's, I think, why I wanted to talk about it today, because it still makes me feel uncomfortable even saying that, you know, we had pinworm. But from what I heard, and you can correct me on this, is that we're also getting more pinworm because there's a bit of a resistance to some of our wormers. Is that true?
The pinworm is probably one of the least likely worms to be resistant to the wormers. They are pretty easy to kill, but that we're just not getting concentrations of the drugs to where they are and where they live. They've come up with this home that is quite isolated from our modern day wormers. So in some ways they're quite clever, so then they've developed. But there is resistance, and all worms do develop resistance, so we have to be careful. And actually, they're quite a difficult worm to pick up the eggs on a fecal egg count, because they lay the eggs around the anus. They don't lay them into the droppings, which is where we look for. So, it's breaking that cycle and breaking and also using the wormers directly onto them, really, to get that there. And that should kill them. And most of the time, as I say, they just cause an itchiness. So it could be another differential for a horse that looks like it's got sweet itch or something like that, for rubbing its tail, or suddenly has become itchy around its back end. It's interesting that you say, like, for you it was in January, so it would quite likely to have been the pinworms that you see for a worm that survives most of the year round, whereas other worms don't like the cold weather so much, although our seasons aren't what they used to be.
No, I know. It's been quite mild at the moment, hasn't it?
Yeah, yeah, definitely. And so that's affected our worm population. Yeah, definitely.
So, okay, if it makes you feel any better and, you know, you're listening to this thinking I might have worms, don't feel bad, because I poo pick the fields every day. An interesting thing that I learnt was that the where you keep the droppings, obviously we know it needs to be away from water, but it doesn't need to be in a ditch or not on the top section of the field, because then the worms can migrate down the field. So it's always better being in a lower section.
Yes, the worms can spread out from there into the field, but generally that heat that's developed in a muck heap kills off most worms and most eggs that are laid into the droppings. But just putting it onto the side of a paddock is probably not going to be as effective as taking it away somewhere separate, and in like where there's concrete and the to continue the life cycle of that worm is going to be, that's going to be broken by, so i.e. not having grass and water around for those larvae to develop into full-blown worms. Each worm has a different type of life cycle.
It would be ideal, though, if we all had places where we could put them, but we don't always have cement, we don't always have planning permission, so we kind of have to do what we can, just do what we can to get rid of it. I know, you know, as long as you're getting your manure taken away, but there's that period in before where you've got to store it, so I guess it's finding the safest place that you can store it without it being able to be able to spread. But you mentioned earlier about the itching, which I thought was interesting. So they get itchy. What other signs are there? There's obviously the white ones in the manure. And then can you physically see the eggs around their bottom?
So around their bottom, you see it's often an orangey colour. As I say, it used to be called anal rust because it does look like their bottoms have got rusty underneath their dock when you lift their tail up. And you just get that appearance, and usually just... So the worm sticks its tail out to lay the eggs, and all around in a circle, so all around the anus, really, where it comes out. So, and that's why you want to be keeping that wiping away.
In order for the test, in order to do a test, when you do a normal worm egg count, you have to collect some droppings, don't you, and pop it in a pot and send it off to your nearest worm egg count place. But to do a test for pinworm, it's a bit different, isn't it? Can you describe that process, please?
Yeah, so we don't test for it very often because they are quite easily killed. But if you do have a horse that's itching, you can itching their tail, you can put sellotape strips around their bottom. So just gently putting those on, and then that will pick up any of the eggs that are there. And again, that can be sent off and analysed under a microscope if you were concerned about that. In this instance, with pinworms, I would probably recommend, if a client came to me, that if they saw this orangey tinge around the horse's back end and they were itching their tails a lot, or if suddenly their horse had been itching an awful lot and for the last few years they've had clear egg counts or been using amoxidectin or ivermectin-based wormer, I would recommend using a wormer around their back end or washing with Hibby scrub or something like that. So the wormer would work like a normal wormer by putting it around at the back end, or using the Hibby scrub a couple of times a week for 3 weeks to break the cycle.
Oh, that sounds good.
But you can send it off to be tested as well. So
yeah, just another type of worm to add to our paranoia anyway, you know.
No, that's it. As I say, apart from the itchiness, they don't really affect the horse's condition, or they don't cause colic or anything like that, because they're right at the end of the digestive tract. So the horse has already taken everything out from the food anyway that it has to. Have developed a good little niche of an area that they want to live. You know, the main worries are your red worms, the strong aisles, and the tapeworms as well, from a sort of colic and life-threatening disorders for your horse from worms.
Now that's interesting in itself, because we had so I have a young an 8-month-old colt. He's the one that had the pinworm, and he's had an immensely big worm burden. I've really struggled to get his worm burden zero. You know, he went down dramatically. So he had the pinworm, and then from the end of January throughout February, he suddenly dropped his condition. His fur became quite wiry and fine. His stomach just started to balloon out. And I was thinking, what on earth is going on? Because, you know, I've wormed correctly when he moved here. Yes, we've had a spout of pinworm, but we dealt with that. So dealing with that was, he had to have another wormer. We stripped the field. He was isolated, cleaned his bottom, like you suggested. Got rid of, disinfected all the rugs that might have the eggs on them as well. And anything that he might have rubbed himself onto was disinfected. So as far as I was concerned, we'd completed everything to make sure that there was no more pinworm around. And by the end of February, he again had a horrific worm burden. And this time it's encysted red worm. And in the end of last year, you know, we wormed correctly for encysted red worm, to then find in February he's really poorly again.
Okay. The other thing, so we'll talk about red worm in a minute, but the other thing you have to be careful with young animals, so under a year of age, is the roundworms and Parascaris. Now, they usually develop their normal natural immunity to this by the age of 2 or 3, but young animals can really be infected, and that could possibly also have been what you saw in the droppings. They're quite a thick white worm as well, and they can cause them to look unthrifty and poor hair coat and get that pot belly appearance as well. And we're seeing a lot of resistance to for those type of worms as well. Because in the young animal, we don't really want to use moxidectin, because that they don't often have enough fat reserves for the levels to make it a safe worm to use. So we're using more of the older type of wormers, such as the fenbendazole in things like Panicure. Ivermectin has been around for a fair while, but there's a fair amount of resistance to that as well. So again, with your chap that you're talking there, you would want to worm and then do fecal egg counts as well to check that we are killing those off and they're not resistant, because you might need to use, if he's got such an issue with getting these worms and having a high worm burden, which he could have picked up from his mother, from where you didn't breed him, you brought him in,
yeah,
did you?
Brought him in, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's it. So that would have been beforehand. And then we'll need that regular worming. It's a real worry as well if he's had the encysted red worms too, because that can make them really poorly. And especially this year where we had that warm spell in February, that the larvae, because they migrate and bury into the intestinal wall. So then they can all come out. And it depends how quickly they come out. And yes, it's from a worm infection from when they were from the autumn before, because that's when they've gone into the intestinal lining and sort of hibernated over winter and then start coming out. And it's the moxidectin that kills those live larval stages. And that's where we have to be careful with using it in a young animal.
Well, that's the problem, Gemma, is that I can't, you know, there's only so many wormers I can use on a youngster. Now, interestingly, it was, when you said it was in him 6 months ago. That's what I heard, is that actually it was the, I think it's encysted red worm. I think we caught it just in time, in that I didn't see any of the red worm in his droppings, but it's that time of year, I'm presuming it's red worm. We did five.
Has he had diarrhea as well?
Yes. Mm. Yeah. It got So I'm thinking, well, the encysted really was from 6 months ago. And like you said, it's now they come alive this time of year. And I'm hoping that we might have caught it just in time, just from his coat and looking at his condition and how his condition dropped so quickly. And what scares me the most is I didn't realise, like you just said, that the worms can go through the gut wall, which ultimately can kill them. So to cure it, I did a 5-day Panicure.
Yeah, well done.
And it's worked perfectly. So he is now worm-free. Yeah. It's now coming up to tapeworm time. So he's having an ember tape and, he's completely clear, which is fabulous. Lucky, really lucky, actually.
Yeah, and it sounds like he will probably be the type that will be prone to worms. So you've got to be strict with your worming programs throughout. But by doing the fecal egg counts alongside, then you'll be able to learn that as well. And it sounds like your management is good by picking up the droppings and doing everything else that you can do to try and prevent the spread of worms. That's it. By isolating him from your other horses and at that time, and trying to get him clear and monitoring him with those fecal egg counts, but also he'll probably require some worming.
Yeah. So what about the people that are great and have had their horses for years and never had a worm issue? I praise you because that's amazing. and they do the worm egg counts and they haven't got any worms, and that's great. Do they still need to worm for encysted red worm once a year and tapeworm, or is it because they're clear they don't need to worry about that?
I think if you've had a horse for several years that you have kept in the same environment and you've done regular fecal egg counts throughout the summer, so you know they haven't, and they've always been zero, pretty much, then you're pretty safe to know that your horse has got an innate, its own resistance to getting a worm burden. So probably wouldn't need worming at all against those larval stages.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The larval stages are a worry, and that's it. And you don't see the problem until the following spring from the autumn. So you do need to have known that horse's history for a good couple of years and the environment not have changed to have that confidence to not use the wormers for the larval stages, i.e. the moxidectin and or a 5-day Panacure equine guard, the fenbendazole. So, but if you've got any horses that have moved to and from your yard or don't know that horse's history that well or how they respond to worms and being challenged by worms, then it's probably the safest to cover them with a treatment for the larval stages in winter so you don't get those issues. But we do need to be careful about how much drugs we use because we are developing, the worms are developing more and more resistance. So trying to keep them to a minimum, that's why it is really good to try and do these fecal egg counts so you know your horse's history and how it responds to all of these things so that we can then reduce the amount of drugs. I often get people ask me, oh, well, actually, it, from a cost point of view, you end up spending more on fecal egg counts and then you still have to worm. But it's a time game, really. And over time, how you're going to be able to learn and then not use the wormers. Mm. So, for instance, I've had my two mares for 10 years plus now, and I've done regular fecal egg counts. And then I now hardly worm them at all, and then I do the fecal egg counts, but I don't do as many now either because I know. But we just moved house last year, so I don't know what the contamination is on this ground. So this year, for the first time, I did treat them with moxidectin based product, so that I was sure that this spring we won't have a problem with encysted red worms at all.
Oh, I can't wait to get to that point, Gemma. I'm looking forward to that. Yeah. Get rid of this lot and then...
yeah, I hope you will get there.
I shouldn't be ashamed, should I?
No. And it's and there's always knock-on effects to everything. So that's it. The wormers, but oh gosh, now we've got more of an issue with pinworm because they've evolved to be able to everything is always evolving, so there's always a knock-on effect for everything that we do, and it's being aware of it. But the worst thing that you can do, that I think when people should feel a bit ashamed, is when they've ignored things and not done it. But when you've been actively trying your best and working out, and worming has become a little bit more confusing. Now we're trying to limit the amount of drugs that we use because we do have to use management regimes, and it's all on a much more of an individual basis. And I would want to just say, obviously I am a vet, but talk to your vets. We do give free advice and talking about all of these things so that we can advise you from knowing what your horses are like as what will be the best regime for you, because it does vary much on the individual yard and for the individual horse. Like yours is a young horse, so you know it's very difficult to get that balance right because of what drugs we have available to us. And if you have got a problem with resistance, we're wanting to try and find that and work out what is the best way to get around that issue as well.
And so many things come into play as well. You know, I've learnt that we had new horses on the field, so that's probably, and the fact that the foal was a new young foal, so he hadn't been wormed mm-hmm. before because he was too young, so no doubt he was going to bring something here. I think I was just so shocked that the wormer didn't work originally for him. I thought that his first wormer would kill everything, and it didn't. And I wasn't really expecting that. So when we did get worms, I was really quite mortified because in my head I thought, well, I've wormed him, so why has he still got it? But, you know, I guess sometimes they just need a little bit more. But equally, you've got to be really careful how much you use, because the wormer could kill mm-hmm. him as well. So he's got worms that could kill him, yeah. and then the wormer could kill him. So it's yeah, like having children, isn't it? It's too much.
Yeah, it is. That's it. It's finding that happy medium. And often in foals, the larval stages can be transmitted through the milk of the mare. So it's those larvae that are resistant from that's built up within the mare as well, for then and they develop into in the foal and are resistant worms to various wormers. There are wormers that are licensed to use in foals from 2 weeks of age. But again, you know, when we've got this resistant population in the foal already, it can make life really challenging. And it's trying to find what levels they are and what worm population we're really dealing with. Sounds like you were very unlucky with a very mixed population of worms that has affected your poor colts. Mm. Hopefully that won't affect. It's amazing how they can go on. I've dealt with some cases, you know, of you know, top show jumpers that have had foals, and we've tried, you know, us as vets are trying to investigate it, and actually it came down to being a worm burden that was the problem as to why foals weren't growing well. And we miss it as vets sometimes, because you think, oh, that should have been killed off by that wormer. Yes, it has been wormed, but we do have to deal with this resistance issue of these superworms that, and the development of new products is tricky as well at the moment.
The interesting thing as well is, if you're listening and you think, well, you know, that this doesn't affect me because I don't have a young horse or I don't have a colt, it actually affected one of the older horses too. So he ended up having pinworm too. So, you know, we do need to keep an eye on it. We can't just presume that the worm is going to do everything, you know. And part of that is monitoring the manure when you're clearing the droppings, when you're clearing the field, and also looking at their urine as well. So obviously urine doesn't affect the worms, doesn't help us tell whether they've got worms, but what things do we need to look at in the droppings and the urine to make sure that we've got healthy horses?
So I think always when you're on your day-to-day management basis, you want to try and get it in your mind what is normal for your horse. So how many droppings do they pass normally overnight? As I say, one of my mares would just pass about 4 droppings, very few really. My other will do about 12 and make a right mess of her stable. Mm-hmm. But that is her, and that is normal. Now, if my older mare suddenly did that many, I think, oh my gosh, what has happened to her overnight? She's probably had an incidence of spasmodic colic that's cleared her out, or why has she been upset? And whereas that's completely normal for my young horse. And so it's learning all of these things, so that if you do have a problem that you know, may take a couple of days, 2 or 3 days to develop and to be seen, you could pick up on it earlier. So again, if suddenly I went into my mare stable and she'd only done 3 or 4 droppings, I would think, oh, is there a reason why she's not passing the droppings? And are we getting an impaction here, a blockage, them getting constipated? And it's much easier to treat that and to sort that out if you act on it there and then, when they're still passing droppings, then a few days later, oh no, she hasn't passed any droppings in the stable overnight and she's colicking. And that doesn't necessarily mean you have to call the vet in, but is there a reason why they're not drinking as much? And so that's why they've got a bit dehydrated and so are not passing so many droppings. Again, are the droppings harder than they would usually? Each horse, you know, we love the to talk about them passing a dropping and then spreading into pellets when they hit the floor. And that's lovely, but you don't want it to be too hard. And it's what's normal for your horse. Some horses do pass extra fluid, especially older horses as well. And their droppings might not be as firm as a younger horse because of their fire and how much the horse is drinking. Again, impactions are more common in colder weather. So if the water's really cold, they might not have drunk so much. And if you've got automatic water drinkers, there might be a reason why that's not been working. And so then you can correct that, and then the horse and your liver will not had an issue with that impaction and can resolve that issue yourself. Or was there not water out in the field the day before? And again, that's linked to their urine. Again, my younger mare is very messy and likes to wee all over the place, and that's completely normal for her. And her stable is quite messy and wet, and I always sigh whenever I go in the morning. But if she was suddenly a lot cleaner, or if it was really flooded, I think, well, what's happened here? Often, it depends whether your horse is competing at a high level and has been sweating a lot, and definitely endurance horses, monitoring their urine output and the smell of their urine, whether it's more concentrated or not, is important as to whether they need some electrolytes or salts really to encourage them to drink. But also in the older horse, it could be a sign that they're developing Cushing's disease, PPID. So just monitoring those things, and they can all be put together to form this picture, which can really help us as vets to say, well, actually, over the last few days, maybe they haven't been doing as many droppings, or maybe their stable has been quite wet, or they've suddenly started drinking a lot more, but not weeing as much, or weeing a lot but not drinking very much, and those combinations, because that can all help us to put a picture together. Mm. So being observant of your horse's area, and obviously whether they've mucked up their beds in a way that is abnormal. Horses are creatures of habit, and yes, you do have these peculiarities every now and again, but they could be an indicator of something. And of something that might not be an issue there and then, might not be an issue for the next week, but maybe over a year or so, you could think, oh, well, maybe they have been having a little bit of an upset tummy or something overnight and they're stable. Mm. But then also, many horses out in the fields tend to use the same areas to do their droppings. And is there a reason why if that suddenly changed? Now, that could be to do with an electric fence pulsator or something different that has managed to change their habits. And that might not be a bad thing, and that might not be a thing to need to worry about. But if a horse is fretting or something has changed and that's upsetting their behaviour, that could have another knock-on effect somewhere else. Mm. That could be an easy thing that, as an owner, you could change and evolve and not need to have other people involved to help you sort out an issue. Mm.
So, I have one horse that's brilliant. He, Blackjack, for those that listen know Blackjack very well, he goes to the toilet in the same place. There's like two different corners, and he's amazing. And then the little one, the little colt, he just goes everywhere, wherever he is, you know, throughout the whole of the field. But it's fascinating to see there's seven or eight different horses, different breeds, different heights, different sizes, and see the difference in their droppings. I never thought I'd have this much of a detailed conversation about droppings before, but it is actually really fascinating because they're generally on very similar food. They all live out 24/7. They're on the same grass. So their droppings are similar, but not the same. So some are firmer, much firmer than the others. The little Dartmoor pony is very much the same as the colt, actually. Quite really firm, round, quite solid, not too solid, and almost a little bit shiny. Whilst the bigger, more cob-like horses tend to be a little bit softer, a little bit more like Cowpat. I mean, not that sloppy, but, you know.
Sloppy,
yeah.
Much
bigger. But
more on that side.
Yeah, yeah. So do breeds have things, to, you know, have a part to play in it too?
Definitely. There's So like the Dartmoor ponies and those ponies that are actually bred to be up on the moorland, and that their bodies have evolved that they do get as much as they possibly can out of the food that is available to them. And so they do often have a smaller, tighter, firmer dropping because they've sucked all of that nutrition out from them. And the cobs, being very generalistic, are often, they're either more laid back or they're really over the top and excited about things and stress about things. And both of those things mean that their digestive tract doesn't work in quite the same way, and they often have a slightly wetter dropping. So yeah, not particularly loose, but not formed as much as a little moorland pony. We have to remember how they're what they were bred for and evolved for originally, because it does have a huge knock-on effect. Going off on a bit of a tangent, but like ponies and insulin resistance, you know, moorland ponies, Shetland ponies, Dartmoors, Exmoors, New Forests, it's in their breeding that they don't have much food over the winter, and so that they stockpile it in the summer, and then they should lose the weight over the winter, and that this affects their normal insulin and glucose metabolism. And when we bring them into our lives and we want to feed them because it's cold, and we want to feed them because it's winter and they need some food and there's no grass out there, that actually affects their normal natural rhythm through the year. And we can be developing then this insulin resistance, which then leads on to problems like laminitis. And actually using the winter to get these ponies to lose weight is really important, because that's a natural way that they do it, and the best way.
Well, again, I had the guilt this year.
We do want to feed them.
Again, I had the guilt this year because I was brutal over winter. I mean, they were all very chubby. They've got lovely grass. They had lovely grass at the end of last year, and we feel very lucky. But I looked at them and thought, you're going to have to shiver to lose some of that weight. So, you know, they had less rugs, and they didn't get soaking wet. And they had rugs to keep them dry. As long as they're dry and warm, I thought that was okay. But I did under rug, and we managed to lose some of the weight quite quickly. So actually, you're going into spring in a much more confident way, feeling less. I feel less nervous now than I did in the winter time, when I was thinking, if they go into spring looking like this, we're going to be in trouble.
definitely yeah. No, and that's it. It's I've been out to see some ponies this morning, and thinking they're carrying far too much weight for going forward to the spring. So we've got to try and up their exercise in some way, shape or form, and be really cautious about that spring grass coming through. And it's really difficult to predict when that's going to be with the weather that we've been having over the last few years, and we've had nasty bouts of laminitis and that, so.
Oh no.
But we do grow good grass down here in the West Country.
Yeah. You're lucky on one hand. It's like a split sword, isn't it, really? Double-edged sword.
Definitely.
Well, Gemma, thank you so much for joining us today. I know that I have talked a lot about my own horses today, but if you have any questions, then you can send us a message on Twitter @horsehour, #horsehour, and we can ask you as well, can't we, Gemma? What's Penbode's Twitter handle?
@PenbodeEquine.
Perfect. And you're on Instagram as well, Penbode_equine_vets. And then if you have any ideas of what you'd like us to talk about on these veterinary episodes, then drop me a message @horsehour on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. And don't forget to use #horsehour. And feel free to share your beautiful pictures of your clean fields and your very healthy horses. And and enjoy horse hour. Thank you so much for your time, Gemma.
Thank you.
Thanks so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode. As always, you can catch previous episodes of the Horse Hour podcast on our website. Just head to horsehour.co.uk, and of course, from all your usual podcast places, iTunes, Acast, Stitcher, Player FM. And if you really like these Penbode Vets episodes, then you can catch them on their website too. You know, I love to hear what subjects you really want us to talk about. If there's a particular veterinary issue or problem, or maybe something you want to learn about, then do drop me a message on Facebook, Twitter or Instagram @horsehour. Use #horsehour, and I'll do my very best to find the next best expert guest for you. I hope you have a great week with your horse, and I'll speak to you soon.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.